Okay. What do I do? I've done reading all my commentaries. I'm done taking the notes that I take on my commentary. So what do I do next? Well, this is point seven. After my commentary work, which was number six, then point seven, I bring the commentary work into my notes. After I've done all my commentary work, I set the two documents side by side on my computer screen. I've got my notes on the text, and then I've got the quotations and notes that I've taken from the Bible commentaries I've read. I set the two documents side by side, and I look at what quotations or ideas from the commentaries that I would like to add into my teaching notes. So here's the work after that. The added portions from the commentary are highlighted in yellow. You'll notice that most of the time in my commentary, I put the quoted comments in small Roman numeral letters, you know, I, three small case letter I's and so on. It's not a law for me, but that's just usually the way that it makes sense. So now we're going to go through and quote or examine the quotes from the different commentators that I read that I included. For example, on the section, Psalm 28, verses 1 and 2, under my comment on the first line being, to you, O Lord, will I cry, O Lord, my rock, do not be silent to me, I'm going to include this quote from G. Campbell Morgan. And now notice, I'm giving some of my words and then quoting Morgan. Here it is. My words are this. David said that the Lord was his rock, his foundation, his stability, his security. Now the quote from Morgan, quote, it is a remarkable fact that in all the Old Testament literature, rock is reserved as a figure of deity, never for man. Again, I like it. Okay, so that's why I included it. That's why it's indicated there in my notes. Now, the yellow is just for your sake. I'm just showing that that is how I included it. Okay, next, I can speak about from the line. Again, it's in verse 1 or 2? Psalm 28. It's in verse 1, he says, lest, if you are silent to me, I become like those who go down to the pit. I wanted to include the quote from Kidner. The situation is probably illness or deep despair, and the fear is not a dread of death as such, but of death with unmerited disgrace. And then I also include a quote from McLaren. Now, if you'll notice, the quote I added from Kidner, I don't add anything to it. But the quote I include from McLaren, I add a little something to it because it just reads better to me. This is what I say. Point two, to avoid this disgrace, David needed God to hear him, to no longer be silent. Now, quote McLaren, Jehovah seems deaf when prayer is unanswered and silent when he does not speak in deliverance. I like that. Then a quote from Van Gameren, that's point three. Again, no introduction, I just give it. And then I include that quote under point four by Charles Spurgeon. Again, now, I want you to know, when I include these four quotes, when I actually teach from these notes, I'm not going to read all four quotes. Maybe I'll pick one of them to read. Maybe one of them I'll paraphrase. But I want them in my notes so that when I'm going over it, and I can do a lot of this when I'm teaching on the fly. I say, well, I'll use this one. I won't use this one. But I don't feel under any obligation to read every quote that I put in my teaching notes. Matter of fact, I decidedly do not read every quote that I put into my teaching notes. So I like that one from Spurgeon, and I included it, that thought from verse 1. Now, in verse 2, he says, when I cry to you, when I lift up my hands toward your holy sanctuary, I want to elaborate on that with the quote from Trapp, point 1. An ordinary gesture in prayer, expressing faith, for they held out their open hands as craving beggars. I like that about lifting up the hands. Roman numeral 2. Some, like Clark and others, believe that this proves that David did not write this psalm and that it was actually composed at a later date when the temple stood. This is not necessary because the tabernacle, which was certainly present in King David's days, was also a holy sanctuary. Now, if you noticed, I included that quote from Adam Clark in my notes, but I'm not putting it in my teaching notes. Putting it in my commentary notes, but not my teaching notes. Why? Well, I just want to point out that there's a different thought out there. I don't agree with that thought, but here's why I don't agree with it. And again, that's helpful. Will I include that when I teach on Psalm 28? Maybe I will, maybe I won't, but it's there in my notes. Again, I will include more in my teaching and preaching notes than what I will actually preach at that time when I do the preaching. Okay, continuing on, Kidner says about his quote about the Psalms later, I'm kind of doing that, which is refuting Clark's idea, and I like to include that because Kidner agrees with me, so good on Kidner for that. Now, the quotes that I would include under verses 3, 4, and 5, just to give you an idea of the highlighting there. Again, that's section 2 of the first part. So we're talking about large capital letter A, now point 2, which encompasses verses 3, 4, and 5, asking to be spared the fate of the wicked. I'm going to quote in that one the idea that comes to us from Kidner. Again, there's that quote. And then I'm going to quote as well. I'm going to include this quote from Spurgeon, that one about the false words, just because, man, it was such a delicious quote from Spurgeon. I felt like I had to put that in my notes. The next quote I'm going to include is again from Derek Kidner regarding verse 4 when he's talking about what he prays that God would do to the wicked. Again, I think Kidner's quote there, these verses are not simply vindictive, but put into words the protest of any healthy conscience at the wrongs of the present order and the conviction that a day of judgment is a moral necessity. I think that's just a great thought from Derek Kidner. Also, when it speaks of the judgment of God in those verses, I'm quoting William Van Gameren, that quote, the acts of the Lord in creation, redemption, and Yahweh's rule through David reveal the wonder of God's purpose. The history of redemption condemns the wicked. Again, that's a wonderful, I think, valid point from Van Gameren. I thought that was a good place to insert it in my notes. Now, we come into the second half of the psalm, beginning at verse 6. The first division there covering verses 6 and 7, praising the Lord who hears prayer. Let's see what I inserted from the commentary notes, from the commentator's notes. After the phrase, blessed be the Lord because he's heard, I'm quoting G. Campbell Morgan, and I kind of did this one an interesting thing. G. Campbell Morgan, suddenly the prayer becomes a song of praise, an act of adoration, Morgan. And then I put my own comment in there. This praise was founded on a reason indicated by the word because. And then I thought, here's a great place to insert the quote from Spurgeon. Real praise is established upon sufficient and constraining reasons. It is not irrational emotion, but rises like a pure spring from the deeps of experience. And then later on, I think as well, another quote from Spurgeon, I thought it just fit in very well, this idea about the Lord being our strength. As it continues on in that section, second section of the psalm, I'm including next a comment that I begin to preface with my own thoughts. I say, David knew that God answered his prayer, perhaps even before the answer was at hand. And then I include this quote from Clark that I so appreciated about prayer, about David being certain of the answer of his prayer. I just thought it would be good to introduce it with that sentence that I included there. Then we continue on to the last section of the psalm, my part 2 of section 2, verses 8 and 9, praising the Lord, who is the strength of his people. And let's see what I included there. In that second section, verses 8 and 9, under the line, save your people and bless your inheritance, that's in verse 9, I kind of give a summation and then include, I think, this really good quote from F.B. Meyer. I point out the psalm started with a plea for personal help and rescue, but by the end of the psalm, David's concern is for the Lord's people as a whole. And that's why he's speaking to God's people. And I thought that the quote from F.B. Meyer, though it's a little bit long, really expressed that well. And that's why I put in there. And so I break it down here where it says, save, God's people needs rescue and look to God for it. Now, this breakdown that I do at the end, save, bless, shepherd, those comments didn't come directly from the commentaries that I read, but they were suggested by reading them. The commentaries contribute to the notes in more ways than in just direct quotes. So save, bless, shepherd, bear them up. these different bullet points that I'm putting, I think all of those have a wonderful application. And then there at the end, I have this quote by F.B. Meyer. Again, Jesus does not simply lead us to green pastures and still waters. He bears us and he bears us up and he does so forever, never tiring, though he imparts infinite rest, never ceasing for a moment his shepherd care. Again, I think that's a beautiful, powerful thought. Okay, so what I've done is I've finished copying the notes that I took from the many different commentaries into my own teaching notes. So now I have point eight in my methodology finishing up. You see, once I bring the commentary portions into the notes, I go over the whole thing again just to make sure I like the flow. Maybe I'll move some things around. Maybe I'll cut some things out and I'll look for spelling or grammar things to correct, which I always miss some, but that's not a big deal. Now, since this is a psalm with a title, one of the last things I do is write a little something on the title of the psalm as an introduction. I do this because the titles are actually part of the Hebrew text, not something that was added by later translators. For years, I would read the psalms. I'd see the titles in there, like to the chief musician, a psalm of David, or just as it is here in Psalm 28, a psalm of David. I thought that translators added that, but no, it's in the Hebrew text. So here's what I wrote on the title of this psalm. Ready? This psalm is again simply titled a psalm of David. It shows David, the son of Jesse, once again crying out to God and praising him for the hearing and the answering of his prayer. In this psalm, we see the heart in a few different aspects. The evil heart, verse 3, the trusting heart, verse 7, and the rejoicing heart, verse 7. Now, again, I also think that though the title I gave to the psalm way back at step 4, I decide with it, I'm happy with the original title, so I'm happy to the title I gave to it, Psalm 28, Praise from Prayer Heard and Answered. I'm happy with the description I give of the title of the psalm, and now I throw in a little thing, a little three-point sermon there about the evil heart, the trusting heart, and the rejoicing heart. And again, before I would actually teach with these notes, I would go through them again and take out the things that I might skip over. I might cut those out from my original teaching notes. Maybe I would cut things out because I just have too much material for the time allotted to speak. Well, then I got to cut some things out. Maybe I cut some things out because they're more academically oriented and it's really not the people I'm preaching to. Maybe I cut some things out in the sense that the Holy Spirit just doesn't want me to emphasize those things at this time and for that group. You know, hopefully I'm being led by the Spirit. And maybe I cut out some quotations that are good, but I'll paraphrase them instead of quoting them. When I'm all done with it, what is it? It's time to pray, 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 and then to teach. Look, you can see that the work of preparing for teaching and preaching, studying the Bible in depth, it's a lot of work. But isn't that what God said to us? He said, study to show yourself approved to God, a workman that needs not be ashamed. So it's an intense process, it's a long process, but for me personally, it's an incredibly rewarding process. I don't know from my whole 8-point process what is going to be helpful to you. I begin with the text, I organize things on a big level, then I organize things on a smaller level, then I give the chapter or the psalm a title, then I go line by line and break it down, then I go to my commentaries, then I carry what I took note of in the commentaries into my own teaching notes, and then finally I finish it up and wrap it up. That's the methodology I use. Maybe something of that might be of help to you, but whatever it is, keep working at the glorious, wonderful task that God has given us as Bible teachers and preachers, this privilege he's given us to share his word, and even if you just did it for your own edification, that would be a blessing as well. So thanks for this. Thanks. If you want to, go over to my Bible commentary. Well, maybe we'll put this link in the notes. Go over to Psalm 28 at enduringword.com, and you can see the exact notes that I drew from this in their final form. Anyway, blessings to you. Thanks for joining us for this video.